Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Once we do that, then should be able to cover everything that we need to cover in reference to this week, what happened over the course of this week, and looking forward to two fights next week. So that's something there that we should be able to do. But it seems like what happened over in Brooklyn has like a lot of people more questions than answers, particularly with the main event of the evening last night. But we'll be able to get into that in depth here as I'm going through the social media circles to share this link here in reference to this particular episode. So that's what I'm going through right now. As you know, there's many social media circles that I control. That includes The Boxing Source on Facebook. You also have Boxing Source 2. At Boxing Source 2 on Twitter. We're also, you know, in various pages and groups on Google Plus, and you can also find us on Instagram as well at The Boxing Source. But we want to get into
boxing talk here real fast. Just wanted to go through a few news and notes before getting in depth with what's happening. The major topic was going to be the fight card that was at the Barclays Center last night, as we had three marquee fights there. So I'm going to be covering those to go through a few other key results that happened over the course of the weekend. That includes what happened over at the SSE Arena in Belfast, Ireland, as you had in the co-feature, Zamani Tete defending his WBO Bantamweight Championship against Omar Andres Narvaez. He was able to win that particular fight by unanimous decision there. So he was able to move to 27 wins and three losses, while Narvaez fell to 48-3-2. So Zamani Tete was able to defend that WBO Bantamweight Championship. And in the main event, you had Carl Frampton going up against Nonito Donaire, with the interim WBO Featherweight Championship on the line. And Carl Frampton was able to defeat Nonito Donaire by unanimous decision with scores of 117-111 all across the board. So all three judges has scored about 117-111 for Carl Frampton there. So that's not one thing that we were able to basically see there in Belfast. But also, you also had at the Echo Arena in Liverpool the return of Amir Khan to the ring. He was fighting at the super welterweight limit, and you know, being that, you know, Amir Khan went up to middleweight to fight Canelo Alvarez, and of course got sparked. But after that knockout, he didn't see Amir Khan in the ring for a while. And here in April 21st, he was able to have a return bout where he weighed in at 150 pounds, going up against Phil Ogreco, who, you know, is, excuse me, you know, was at welterweight. Good lose to the likes of Errol Spence Jr. and Sean Porter before having this fight against Amir Khan. But Khan was able to get the TKO victory in round one for that. So you have Amir Khan moving to 32 wins, four losses, and while Phil Ogreco was still 228-4. So that was, you know, another key bout that was out there in that was out there yesterday. Now going through the key results that were at the Barclays Center. First in the bout on Showtime was Gervonta Tank Davis against Jesus Marcelo Andres Cuellar. And Gervonta Davis was able to stay undefeated, move to 20-0, and have his 19th knockout in his career, and this time was able to get the WBA super featherweight right here after losing the IBF super featherweight championship due to weight issues in his last fight against Francisco Fonseca. So he was able to score a third round knockout or a third round TKO over Jesus Cuellar to move to 20-0, and Cuellar falls to 28-3. And then the second bout with the co-feature, it was Jermall Charlo going up against Hugo Centeno Jr. for the interim WBC middleweight championship. You have, of course, Jermall Charlo, that was a junior middleweight champion, or a super welterweight champion, whatever you want to call it. Moving up to middleweight, he did have, you know, his one fight at
against George Sebastian Healy back in July 29th of last year. And so his next fight here against Hugo Santangelo Jr. Was his second fight. Santangelo Jr. was 26-1 at the time with this long loss by TKO to Selecki, who is about to fight Daniel Jacobs at Barclays Center on April 28th. So, they have Santangelo Jr. there. Remember, this fight was originally scheduled to be earlier this year, but to a rib injury to Santangelo Jr., it was pushed back to April 21st. And so, you have Jermell Charlo here with his second bout at middleweight, was able to get a quick KO victory against Santino Jr. After that first round. That was pretty much like a filling out process. And then they were able to square off pretty much in the on the ropes there. But, excuse me. But that looked like it was basically a mistake there for Santino Jr. as he was able to get hit with one shot and still was able to swing back at Jermell Charlo, but then got hit once again with the right hand that basically stunned him or stopped him in his tracks, and he eventually went down to the canvas and did not get up 2-3-10 count. So Jermell Charlo was able to get the knockout win, moved to 27-0, and you know, had the official tag as the mandatory challenger for the WBC middleweight championship. So then that, and then in the main event of the evening, you had Adrian the Problem Broner going up against Jesse Vargas. Adrian Broner coming in there with 33 wins, 3 losses. Jesse Vargas coming in there with 28 wins, 2 losses. And, you know, both guys being former champions in multiple weight classes, you have Vargas as a unified champion of sorts in the super lightweight division, and then he was able to get the WBO welterweight championship in 2016 with his win over Saddam Ali. Of course, you know, many people know about Adrian the Problem Broner, a.k.a. the Can Man, was able to win, world championships in the super featherweight division, the lightweight division, then the welterweight division, and then back down to the super lightweight division. But this time, he was going up against Jesse Vargas in the welterweight division in a basic catch weight up to 144 pounds. And that was a bout that was back and forth between the two, and it eventually was scored a majority draw as two judges scored the bout 114-114, and one judge had it 115-113 for Adrian Broner. So both Vargas and Broner have their first draw on their record there. So it ended up being, you know, basically an income for the overall fight there. So wanted to get into both all three fights. Excuse me. Yo, just a lot for me to catch up with. Just getting some rest before I even got on the show. And like very, very busy weekend, as you know, pretty much do almost every weekend now. But getting into what happened here at the Barclays Center, just wanted to focus on first the Yvonte Tank Davis fight against, you know, Jesus Cuellar. And you know, like it was a preview and before this fight took place, that you had Cuellar there at coming in at 28 wins and 2 losses. And the thing with him was that he did, you know, have a string of wins before losing to Ivan Amaris in December of 2016. So he was a world champion at featherweight, but lost that title to Ivan Amaris back in 2016. And he had not had a fight since then. So this is basically Cuellar's first fight in, you know, 16 months. Going up against Gervonta Tank Davis, you know, young guy there, you know, just there at about 23 years old, had been very active. Had 3 fights in 2017, you know, a couple fights in 2016, but, you know, overall, you know, 19-0 coming into this particular fight. Had that IBF Super Featherweight Championship in 2017 before losing it on the scales before his fight against Francisco Fonseca. And, of course, a lot of people had, you know, a lot of feedback in that particular fight there. 202, I'm going to have you on here on hold for a little bit, and then after I go through this David Square fight, I'm going to have you on here. So, going back to this whole thing with Gervonta Davis and Jesus Square, it was basically a fight to see where Gervonta Davis was at this point of his career. There had been, you know, a lot of feedback or a lot of criticism of Tank Davis after his fight against Francisco Fonseca, where, number one, he came into that fight overweight, and number two, he had, like, a lackluster performance. Even though he was able to get a KO win, it was through, you know, controversial circumstances in that he basically scored a KO where many people thought it was, like, a foul. And his comments after the fight showed that he really didn't carry himself well, one bit leading up to the fight, during the fight, and after the fight. So for someone that was, you know, had basically been a rising star in the sport of boxing, that particular fight really hurt him because a lot of people were watching. Of course, the pay-per-view was Mayweather versus McGregor, had about, you know, over 4 million pay-per-view buys. So you had a lot of buys that watched that particular bout, which was like a co-feature bout for. So, going up here against Jesus Cuellar, it was basically something to where he had to show that he had changed in a sense. But we knew, you know, he had the ability. He just had to put it together and show that against Cuellar. And, of course, he looked worlds better than Cuellar for the jump. He was able to execute, you know, everything that he needed to do. And he was able to score the TKO victory near the, you know, in round three there to stay undefeated. So before I, like, get into more details on that, I wanted to add 202 on the line. And I also have another caller in here, 646. So I'm going to add them two on here. But first, I want to hear from area code 202. What's going on with you?
James, what's up, man? It's World Rank. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you there, man. What's going on, my man?
What's going on, man? So you want a Gervonta Davis fight. So being on this show previously, I had talked about, you know, I was kind of high on Gervonta Davis. I kind of, you know, mentioned him prior to everybody else getting on the train before his fight was before he won the title against Pedraza. I'm still high on him, but I've always said that I didn't think he was ready for Lomachenko. This fight, I'm a guy that's about resume. I'm a guy about what are you doing about fighting the best. My expectation of this fight was that he met it. He met the expectation. He did what he supposed to have done in this fight. He looked, No question, he looked good, but I don't take much away from it because of the opponent. I'm a little agitated that, and I spoke about this in a previous call as well, about people, especially guys from PVC, just grabbing belts. They're not consolidating the belts. They're just grabbing belts and calling themselves four or five time world champions without really facing anybody. So, you know, he looked good, but I got to look at his opponent. Quelaw's a tough guy, but again, he was moving up. He lost to Marez, so that kind of tells you where his level is. I've always been high on Javante Davis, but I've also been reasonable about his critique. And I didn't take anything away from this fight, really for his career and his future. It didn't change my perspective about him one way or the other. I don't feel better or worse about him again because of the opponent. I don't like the way that, again, I go back to grabbing belts and all that. Alberto Machado was a WBA champ. They just give Davis this belt without really fighting anybody, and then he has a higher belt of the WBA than Machado. Machado should be the champion. He should fight the champion to get the belt. They just giving out belts like candy.
Yeah.
For that reason, you know, I don't like that aspect. Now he could call himself a two-time champion without really facing anybody. But again, he did what he was supposed to do. He looked good, but my expectations was met, but it wasn't more than that.
Yeah, that was a key point about the title that Davis was able to get. He got the World Boxing Association Super Featherweight Championship. And usually with the WBA, if you get a super championship, it's usually because you've already held a championship at that particular division, or that other championship is also on the line in this particular fight. But here, that wasn't the case. So it's like, well, what's up with the WBA regular champion there, number one? And two, it's like, well, aren't you the organization that said that you would consolidate your belts there? So what's up with this when you have Alberto Machado there as the WBA champion? But the thing about this is that they had Tank Davis at the top, ranked number three in the WBA, going up against Cuellar, who was ranked number one in the WBA, fight for that super title. So that's a weird situation indeed. 646 is on the line with us too. Just want to get your take on that Davis Cuellar fight.
Well, obviously, Javante Davis did what he had to do. He actually exceeded my expectations. I'm not sure what fight World Rank was watching, but I think Davis showed a lot of maturity before, during, and after the fight. You know, he was very mature in the press conference. He was very mature in the ring. He showed that he is not a knockout artist. To me, what he did was he invested to the body and he worked them over to the body constantly. And to me, he actually showed that he would be a problem for anyone in or around his weight class, including Lomachenko. I think a lot has been said that Lomachenko would make easy work of him. I think that's kind of an uneducated opinion, because a lot of people think that Davis is some knockout artist that's just going to headhunt and Lomachenko is going to put him through the matrix. But if you look at the fighter that has given Lomachenko problems, that was Salido. And what did Salido do? Salido beat him up to the body. So to me, if you want to stop all this movement and this matrix stuff, you invest to the body. Like Teddy Atlas says, you put water in the basement. And I think Javante Davis showed that he is a committed and devastating body puncher. And I believe that for the first time, I believe he can actually beat Lomachenko.
Oh, wow.
That's something that I think that, you know, a lot of people were looking into. You did bring up the point of, you know, Javonte Davis at first being a knockout artist of sorts, that he didn't really, you know, look to build on getting the knockout. He just looked to swing for the fences with hooks and crosses and uppercuts without, like, trying to set up those shots. You know, we pretty much saw that, you know, a couple years ago. I'm not sure if you were in attendance at the D.C. Armory World Ranked on, you know, that card in April 1st, 2016, where you had Broner going up against Ashley Theophane in the main event. But you did have Tank Davis there in that card against Guillermo Avila, and he got that TKO win there, but, you know, it looked like he was, you know, kind of like swinging for the fences in that particular fight. And you kind of like saw it through his subsequent fights after that. And I guess here against Jesus Cuellar, he kind of like built towards getting those knockouts and, you know, working the body in order to soften Cuellar up during the course of that fight until he was able to eventually get that win there. We already have another caller in here, area code 813. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. Just once again, looking forward to discuss our great win of boxing that's given us many stories. Even on what you just talked about with the Tank fight, I'm really impressed by that because Cuellar is a good, tough guy, very durable. And the main thing I got from Tank, varying up his punches, going to the body, mixing those things up, good kidney shots, stuff like that. And typically you don't see that in young fighters. I think Tank is, what, 20, 21, two fights in, something like that. But still, I like how he varies his attack up. He's not a headhunter. We see a lot of times with young fighters. So I definitely love his skill set and what he displayed there in that fight.
Yeah, he was able to, you know, display his overall skill. But, you know, the key thing here was that he is also able to display discipline as a 6'4", 6", you know, pointed out in his analysis of this particular fight. I kind of saw it the most after the fight when he was talking with Jim Gray and how he was able to, you know, to say that he was, you know, feeling very good about this fight and how he was able to approach it. One of the key things he was bringing up was that he said that he had to get himself away from, you know, the city of Baltimore before preparing for this particular fight because, you know, a lot of us know about, you know, his background in the city of Baltimore and, you know, who he was, you know, hanging around there before he got his pro career, you know, off and running, and that, you know, it was kind of like a deterrent to what he could be able to do in his professional career. And, you know, that was something that was kind of like shown a lot in the lead up to his last fight against Fonseca, that, you know, Floyd Mayweather tried to get him out of that atmosphere and try to bring him along in Las Vegas, but he didn't necessarily receive that all too well, and we all know the overall results of that. So, you know, this fight here kind of like got him over on the good side of things in reference to all of that and, you know, showing that he could, you know, show himself to be very mature and things like that. Did get something here from 646 in that he says that, you know, right now he feels that Javonte Tank Davis could be a guy that could, you know, challenge and defeat Vasyl Lomachenko if that fight takes place. But, you know, with Lomachenko, you know, he has his big fight coming for Jorge Linares. And, I mean, I like that fight. I like that fight. I'm a fan of Linares. That he does, you know, everything very well. He does have, you know, lapses in the course of this fight sometimes, but He is a very skilled fighter, and so I like to see what Belichick does on May 20th against Jorge Linares before I make a full assessment of the possibility of a Tank Davis versus Hot Tech Lomachenko later on down the line there. So wanted to see if I get like any other reactions to this particular fight or through Tank Davis. You know, Matt said that Davis could potentially be the, you know, end up being the best guy in that division and would beat Lomachenko. You know, he wasn't, you know, Davis wasn't really mentioning Lomachenko, you know, all too tough after the.
Hello?
I think we lost the host.
Yeah, I'm back. So I don't know what happened right there, but I'm back. So y'all got me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, no doubt. Yeah, we're talking about the thing there with Tank Davis in reference to his status in the division. That he's in, and you have, of course, the upcoming fight between Lomachenko and Linares there in the lightweight division. May I like to see what happens there with Lomachenko, but you know, that being said, I'm not necessarily sure if Lomachenko really wants to do that fight. I mean, they talk about Tank Davis's reluctance to talk about Lomachenko, but I kind of feel that Lomachenko is in the same or going to go through the same career path that Manny Pacquiao did, in that he's going to win titles in multiple divisions, but he's not going to have multiple fights where he could unify titles. So if he fights Linares and beats Linares, he might have one other fight at lightweight and then, you know, move up to super lightweight and maybe eventually have a super fight with Terrence Crawford later on down the line. So I would like y'all's reactions to, you know, what I said there.
So I wanted to touch on something that 646 said about expectations. Now, me, in terms of Davis, I said Davis was the number two super featherweight before the Pedraza fight. That's how high I was on him. Before the even Pedraza fight, I said he's the number two guy at 130. So my expectations are a little higher because I don't look at necessarily what they do in terms of skill aspect. I look at what they do in terms of in relation to their competition. Who else are they fighting that's in the elite part of the division? So if they're not fighting those, it's hard to gauge how good they really are. In terms of, and this is something that I said in other fights with Gervonta Davis, the Lomo fight is always going to be talked about. I'm not sure if that's a realistic fight, really. Again, I'm not sure. Like the last time we had this conversation about Gervonta, we were talking about Tevin Farmer, and that name keeps coming up, but the fight's not being made. And I know Farmer has a fight. I know Farmer has a fight that's coming up for the IBF belt because the Japanese guy got suspended or whatever. So he's supposed to fight Billy Dead. So that means that the Farmer fight is off. So if you look at 130, Davis is. I think he's going to fall into that Gary Russell category. When he fights, everybody's going to love him because he looks so good. But you got to look at the opposition because the main guys in the division aren't going to fight him. He's not going to get the Burchelt fight. He's not going to get the Loma fight. So it's going to be hard. That division isn't really deep. So it's going to be hard for him to find opponents to, I guess, verify how good he really is. And we've seen that in the Liam Walsh fight. Not really a name, but he grabbed the belt. You saw it in the fight where he didn't look good and he missed the weight. Another guy that's not really a name fighter. So he's going to have that Gary Russell syndrome. When we see him, he's going to be must-see TV, but he's not going to – getting the names is going to be difficult for him. And I think that's that's going to be hard to kind of mirror exactly where he is in the division.
Yeah, gotcha. What y'all was reacting to what World Rank said? Mike, I also got 205 on the line, actually. I want you to see if you had any assessment of the Davis Quayle fight. So 205, where you calling from? What's your name and what's your reaction to that Davis Quayle fight?
What's going on, fellas? It's Mike Brady. I guess I'm calling from Atlanta. I'm out of Atlanta now. So I hear World Rank's voice. I think I'm starting to notice the pattern. World Rank only calls when Gervonta Davis fights. is that right or wrong, World Rank?
not totally right, but yeah.
Dang, man, we miss you. We want you to talk boxing, get in the Wilder debate. So my thoughts were he looked very good. Like Davis was really sharp. Like I had a feeling that he was going to counter Cuellar, because I saw a couple fights where Cuellar, when he threw his jab, he threw it kind of lethargic. And so I was thinking, like, you know, Davis is going to have a field day with this. So, you know, just kind of seeing how responsive Davis was. He was very responsive, kind of light on his feet. He didn't have to move his head because, I mean, his foot quickness was, and the hand speed was there. The uppercuts were crazy. The uppercuts were like monsters being thrown, many monsters being thrown and hit people. But, yeah, I think the right guy was in front of him. That type of guy makes him look spectacular. And so, I think he'll definitely get Lomachenko problems, but I would love to see him, for his benefit, fight a fight to where he got to bite down and win. To where, like, I'm sure he knows that he has it inside of him. He know that he can bite down. But from the fan perspective, I would like to see him have a fight with more resistance, to know that when he does fight a guy like Lomachenko who takes your heart, that he won't get frustrated and his heart won't get pulled out like everybody else's heart gets pulled out, because Davis has the tools to beat him, but Lomachenko, man, the speed kills, and he's really quick, and he pulled people hard out very quickly. Yeah, that's my thoughts. I think Davis looked very good, though. Like, I was happy for him, and he looked very, very sharp and good.
Yeah, no doubt. He was able to, you know, execute the way that he was able to execute. With his speed and quickness, and uses advantages against Cuellar, you know, very much. And so that, you know, led to him getting the TKO victory there and winning the super title in that particular division. And to add to that, I wanted to get any, like, reactions to Davis winning the super title when there was no other title on the line, number one, and number two, I mean, there's a WBA champion that exists there. So, yeah, so anybody else have any reactions to that?
So he won the super title, and what else now?
Yeah, he won the super title in that particular weight class there at super featherweight, when Alberto Machado is the current WBA super featherweight champion.
I would say that, you know, I said this earlier, that it's something about the PBC, and I don't know if that's working with the sanctioning bodies or whatever, or it's just the total politics of the sport, where guys are just grabbing belts and not really defending it. They just grab a belt and then they move to another belt or another division. And I know it's not just PBC, but it seems like, you know, Broner's a four-time champion, but he had maybe the 130-pound title. That's probably the only one that he took, all the rest of them was probably vacant. And you look at other guys that do that. And again, I don't want to blame it on PBC, but it looks like it's politics decided where you have a guy that's already a champion, and you just you go get a guy who lost at a weight class below that, and then how come he becomes the number one at a higher weight class after he just lost? That makes no sense.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, I've never, like, what did we see that happen where, you know, a guy that, hold on, wait a minute. I was just thinking about this question I was saying, like, how does a guy that, you know, hadn't fought in 2 years and was fighting in a weight class, you know, below that, able to become the number one contender? But I was going to say if, you know, somebody else was going to be a number one contender out of nowhere, but he's not. And it's the fight I'm talking about for May 5th. But, that yeah, that's not the case here. But, yeah, that's a good little – question up there. So, yeah, that, I don't know how that's able to happen right there.
Who are y'all referring to?
I'm referencing the situation with Davis and Cuellar, as Jesus Cuellar was the number one contender for the WBA title when he lost to Abdur Baris at super featherweight almost 2 years ago.
And he hasn't had a fight
are
since.
Are you guys really seriously trying to make sense of the WBA ranking?
No, I guess you're trying to make sense of why these guys are title chasing, and people are going to act like. So when people talk about Adrian Broner, a lot of people who defend him, and I know you're going to get to Adrian Broner, but he just happened to be the talk right now. If he a 4-time champion. But he really didn't, you know what I'm saying? He didn't really take nobody's title. He just went one division, then skipped the division and snatched the belt from Paulie. And you know what I'm saying? So he didn't really, who he beat for the 130 title, who he beat for the 135 title. He just going, you know, so these guys are making fights and trying to call themselves champions, but they're not really taking the title from nobody.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, that's the thing about that.
To educate themselves on the titles and understand the difference between being a title holder and being a champion.
You definitely right on that, but nobody's calling Adrian Broner a 4-time title holder. They saying he's a 4-time champion. Anybody that defend him say, oh, AB, 4-time champion.
Yeah, that's the thing about that. They talk about AB as like a 4-time champion, not like a 4-time title holder there. So you do have that. For those that wanted to call in and have their take, we have like 16 minutes for the live show before we get into overtime. Want to get in, call in at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Now, just wanted to jump into the next fight. That I got into with reference to what happened at the Barclays Center on the 21st, and that is that fight between Jermall Charlo and Hugo Centeno Jr., the fight that was delayed because of the injury to Centeno Jr. In his rib. But, you know, we were able to have this particular fight. It was like a filling-out process of sorts in the first round, but in the second round, it picked up, got to the ropes, and Centeno Jr., I guess, got into a little slugfest with, you know, Jermall Charlo, and that was a big mistake. So he basically got chin-checked, and that stunned him, and he eventually went to the canvas in a heap and couldn't get up. So you have Jermall Charlo going to 27-0, and now, like I was saying before, the quote-unquote official mandatory to Gennady Golovkin's WBC middleweight title. And after the fight, he's like, you know, calling out Gennady Golovkin. And yet again, it was another episode of the Charlo brothers looking like the Migos of boxing so far. But that's pretty much, you know, what I got out of the fight. Jermall Charlo is looking pretty good. you know, I'm getting like word around the streets that, you know, Charlo is somebody that could probably defeat Golovkin if that fight took place, but I doubt the fight takes place because I don't see Golovkin taking those risks here at this point of his career. So we'll see what is next in store for Jamal Charlo. Hopefully it's a fight that has him against a highly ranked contender in the middleweight division and is a long-standing person in the middleweight division that I will get into later. But just wanted to get the reactions of this Jamal Charlo Ego Centeno Jr. fight. And I'm going to start with 646 on this one. So go ahead, 646.
Well, obviously, Charlo did exactly what he said he was going to do. Charlo always does exactly what he says he's going to do. And I predict that before 2018 is over, Jamal Charlo will be officially the WBC middleweight champion. And I say that for one reason only. Triple G has to fight him. Now, if you look at what's going on with Triple G and the IBF title situation, he's very likely to be stripped of his IBF title once he goes through with his fight with Vonis Monerosian. So that title is going to be out of the picture. Triple G already made his mandatory defense for the WBA title a couple fights ago. The only belt that Triple G has not made his mandatory for was the WBC title, which means that that title, once he's stripped of the IBF title, will be up next in the rotation of the belts for Triple G to make his mandatory. Whether or not he fights Charlo, I don't know. But what I do know is that if he doesn't fight Charlo and he instead fights Canelo in September, he's very likely going to be stripped of his WBC title, and I believe that Charlo is going to be elevated to the full champion. And like you said, I don't think that that's a risk that Triple G is going to want to take at this point in his career, because honestly, I take Charlo to beat him. If you look at what Charlo is doing in the ring, yes, he's still trained by Ronnie Shields, but you can see the effect that having Derek James in the camp with his brother and with Spence is really doing for him. He's thinking in the ring. He's more aggressive. He's more violent. He's more explosive. And he's more sudden in the ring now. And you can see that. And I don't think that that's a problem that Triple G wants. When you look at how he knocked out Centeno, Centeno had his hand up getting ready to block Charlo's hook. And literally on the spot, Charlo adjusted the trajectory of the punch and caught him lovely with that hook. And then that was all she wrote, basically. So Charlo is, you can see him thinking very quickly, making these split-second decisions in the ring that I think is going to be a problem for a fighter as old and as slow as Gennady Golovkin. So you are literally looking at the future of boxing, and it's looking like Charlo is the future of boxing. The only guy at 160 I think will give him problems is my favorite guy, Billy Joe Saunders. Other than that, that division is Charlo's to rule.
It's interesting that you say that about who Charlo's biggest threat is, because I think it's somebody else, honestly. But what you did say about the WBC, excuse me, like I kind of like disagree with that, in that the WBC would make a decision to strip Golovkin. I don't think they're going to do that, considering the history of their relationship. I know that people were talking about, you know, the WBC standard for We Back Canelo, but in addition to that, before we had this whole thing with the Canelo suspension, you had Gennady Golovkin, you know, trying to belt collect or whatever it is. And the whole situation with the WBC was, he was able to become the mandatory guy for the WBC title while holding multiple world championships at middleweight.
and I've said this time and time again over the, you know, the past couple of years, I have never seen anybody that was a champion that was able to fight the guy that was positioned at number one for another championship while being a world champion. No one has shown me another case of that to this day. And so when you have that and then the whole situation with Miguel Cotto paying almost, you know, whatever he had to pay for him to keep the WBC title before fighting Canelo, and he was like, you know what, fuck that, I ain't going to do it. And so I really doubt that the WBC will force the hand of Golovkin to fight Charlo. They'll probably say that he could pay a step-aside fee, but as far as, like, stripping him, I'm not really thinking that they're going to be doing that. Just wanted to see who would be next on the line for this. I'll go with World Rank, then Terrell, then Mike Grady. So go ahead, World Rank.
So I do believe 646 is right in the aspect that Charlo will probably be the next champion. But again, it goes back to see what I said about David. Who is he going to actually fight to get that belt? Because like you said, Golovkin probably is not an option. And I want to be real clear. If Golovkin doesn't take this fight, that does not mean that he's done. Could Charlo beat him? Yes, Charlo could beat him. I think it's a pretty even fight. But the bag is with Canelo, so you go where the bag is. So I don't fault Triple G for waiting around for Canelo for the rematch. I don't fault him for that, and I'm not going to say that he's ducking Charlo if he gives up the belt. What could happen is, James, like you said, he might just – WBC – who loves Canelo, and as many times as they did Triple G in the past, they might try to not strip him based on that. So what they probably do is let like you said, pay Charlo to the side and let them take the fight, and then the winner of Canelo and Triple G would just vacate it after that. But again, like I said earlier, it goes back to the David situation. Who is he going to fight for the belt? And so now Charlo's going to be called a two-time champion, but he's going to face probably another Helan or somebody for the belt. So I don't really have much more to say about that.
Okay. well, then, if we have the fight between Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez in September for the titles that Golovkin has, and, you know, the winner – you know, wins, and then gives up the WBC belt, then one thing the WBC will do is they'll try to add in a WBC diamond belt like they usually do. So that's number one. And then number two, even if the winner gives up the belt, yes, you do have Jermall Charlo there as the number one contender, but I have to say it now, at number three is Daniel Jacobs. And that would be a great fight if they're able to make that come together before, you know, the end of the year, probably around November or December, after, you know, the winner of Golovkin Canelo decides to give up that belt. So I'm going to have next up on the line. So go ahead, Mike.
Yep. So we're talking about Charlo and.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. So Charlo looked pretty good, man. So is that the Charlo that trains with Errol Spence? Is that the correct Charlo that trains with him? Because I thought one of them don't train with him, right? One of them.
Nah,
so that is not the one that trains with.
Right, correct.
Okay, the 154-pounder trains with Errol Spence.
Right.
Right? Okay. So, yeah, I think the guy is pretty good. He definitely is strong. He definitely, you know, knows how to use his skills. And, you know, watching Centeno looked pretty slick. You know, he looked very, you know, like he knew how to move. He was very, like, fluid. And then he got a little too cocky and got set down. But Charlo's pretty good. I think I like that Charlo, and he definitely backs up. And I don't know, he doesn't seem as brash as his brother. And I'm sorry I'm comparing him, but, you know, like, I watch videos of his brother, and it just, it's like he's very, very young. And then I watch him, he doesn't seem as young-minded, I guess. But the dude is definitely a great competitor. I think if he fought Triple G, it would be a good match. Think of the fight. If he jabs, then he definitely beats Triple G. Especially if he jabs and throws like combos like he does and stuff, I think he'll do very well against Triple G. That's pretty much all I got.
All right. Yeah, that's the thing there with Charlo is that, yeah, if he's able to do or, you know, pretty much go through the whole thing like Daniel Jacobs did in his fight against Gennady Golovkin, he'll be very successful against Triple G. So I'll be looking for that here if they're going to have that matchup, but I doubt that they will. So next up is Terrell. Terrell, what you got on this one?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with pretty much the majority of all the points that 646 made in regards to the projection of Charlo, not fighting and things like that. But just going back to this fight list from Charlo Centeno Jr., this fight was more all about Charlo and how he continues to assault the middleweight division, where, you know, he moved up from 154, what, about a good year ago. I think this is his second fight at 160, and certainly is definitely looking the part, and certainly is definitely looking like the future of the division. Like what James said, we've seen so many wretched decisions from the WBC in recent memory, and even going way back even before that. So I would not be surprised at all to see them hopefully wait out for a Triple G Canelo 2 and once again try to get that sanction fee, not only the sanction fee, but the exposure of that fight, having their title on the line. So we've seen them break the rules before. I would not be surprised to see them break the rules again in hopes of that fight. I mean, just going back to what we look at the immediate future of middleweight, like, so we got Triple G, got all these titles on lock. We know he's fighting Valdez Machirosen next month, albeit on short notice. He's fighting somebody from 154, somebody that hasn't fought in almost 2 years. We just talked about this recently and destroyed it for that. I mean, there's so many other people that he could have fought with, that said. And kind of like what you guys are saying, he's not going to fight Charlo. He don't want that smoke. He's not going to take that risk. And in an age where, not in the age, but in the sense where he's always pushed out his bravado, this mystique that he's always had. And I was just listening to a recent interview from Jacobs. He said that when he fought Triple G going into the ring, yeah, he thought there was a big mystique about Triple G. But when he actually gets into the ring, he's a normal person. Yeah, he does have some concussive power, but he's a normal person. And like I said, that's part of the mystique that HBO has built up about Triple G. But like I said, he does not want any parts of Charlo, not at all. And unfortunately for Charlo, it's going to be a big waiting game in order for him to get a good title opportunity. And like I said, I would not be surprised at all to see the WBC make some kind of wretched decision in order for Triple G to retain that belt. So, but I mean, but this fight was definitely all about Charlo. He definitely showcased his skills, like 646 stated. He definitely a good point about Charlo, like, they moved up, recognized the fact that he was killing himself to make 154, and at that point made the conscious decision to go to 160, even though his brother was at 154. I'm sure that's some kind of sentiment they shared together, staying at that one weight class, but he showed that progression from his body. And not only that, he's showing his progression in the ring with thinking style, being able to adjust on the fly, and as we saw on display this past Saturday night. So he's a good prospect. And just aside from that, we know these guys keep up a lot of kind of mess outside the ring, beefing with Tank Davis, Brown, and stuff like that, and just kind of acting a fool on social media. So hopefully people, they can rein that in and focus and focus on their career and be what they want themselves to be. I mean, and even with Broner, I missed the first part of the show, but Broner had so many antics on social media just coming up into the week of a fight. The week of a fight, you got threats on with a rapper, you know, about beefing and stuff like that. And you're supposed to be totally focused on that. Once again, hopefully the Charles can stay away from that, the mess outside ring, rein in, and be what they want to be.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt on that is that they, you know, with the Charlo brothers kind of like being in these separate weight classes, they had the opportunity to, you know, dominate in both there. Because, you know, with, you know, Jermell Charlo, he could possibly fight unified champion Jarrett Hurd if he is able to get through his fight against Austin Trout. And then Jermell Charlo here in the middleweight division has the opportunity to see if he can unify titles if he does get that shot against Gennady Golovkin here. So that's something that we got to look out for. Just real quick here, we actually got into the overtime by section of the show. Should have just had the this last section be 90 minutes instead of 60 minutes there. But excuse me. But now in overtime, we'll go through the main event at the Barclays Center. Of course, you had Adrian Broner against Jesse Vargas. Both guys there around the welterweight division had a catch weight of 144 pounds. Both guys had been champions at the welterweight division, but, you know, did lose the titles that they had there. You know, of course, with Broner losing against Marcos Lantana, and with Jesse Vargas losing the WBO welterweight title against Manny Pacquiao after, you know, winning it against Saddam Ali. So that's what we have here. It ended up being a draw. I thought it was a pretty good little scrap between the two where they had good moments. Both fighters had good moments. Vargas had a game plan from the jump to, you know, jab and attack the body. Of course, he had the body snatcher as his trainer. So that was something there that he kind of established from the jump. And, you know, with Adrian Broner, he was, you know, basically using his speed and counter-punching ability. And then eventually the lead right hand was very successful. But it ended up being a majority draw. So I am going to go, I'd say, backwards as far as, like, reactions go. So I'm going to go with Mike first, then Terrell, then 646, and then World Rank. So, y'all, Mike, go ahead and start it off.
So I thought the fight was entertaining, you know, to say the least. When the fight first started, I honestly thought Adrian Broner was going to get stopped by the way that Jesse Vargas was going to the body and then how clean the head shots were hitting Broner. If someone does that, like if a fighter with more, more output, better output per, like, round, even more power, does that to Broner, they will stop him. The fight started transitioning, and Vargas obviously started getting tired because of the output that he put out. What's his name, the announcer? Malinaji made a great point to where he's like, the pressure that Broner puts on you just walking forward, it made him throw a bunch of punches, and he felt like he had to just continue throwing punches, and then he got tired toward the end. And so that was kind of what happened. Either his coach was motivating him or Broner in the back of his mind started thinking like, man, this guy, if he beats me, you know, like what can I do? What can I actually say? So I applaud him for after facing that adversity in the beginning because he was getting his ass whooped at first. He bit down and he started throwing punches. And he saw that if he let his hands go, Vargas was easy to hit. Started letting his hands go toward the middle rounds and then toward the late rounds. It was, if he dug down just a little bit more and we always say this about Broner, if he did this, if he did that, if he did this. But in my opinion, Broner, like, you could tell Jesse Vargas went into the fight, and he had the idea, I'm going to leave it all in the ring. I'm going to go for broke and whoop the shit out of Broner. I can't say Broner had that throughout the whole fight. Yes, Broner pulled through and he bit down when Vargas was pinning on him very hard, and then he bit down and, like, started fighting back. But, like, the end of the fight where he visibly had Vargas hurt at times, and then Vargas's demeanor was just so much different, Broner should have. It's easy for me to say on the sideline, but it would have been nice to see Broner bite down and put up the effort that he had against Maidana. Because even though he lost to Maidana, he definitely didn't want to lose that fight. Like, he knew he was down, and he didn't want to lose that fight. Like, I can't say he finished strong like he finished strong in the Maidana fight. And so I'm not mad with the tie, but I didn't score the fight. But, you know, I'm not mad. I would much rather see one of these guys face Omar Figueroa than to see them fight again, because I think Omar Figueroa would be that guy to either beat the crap out of Broner. I think Omar beats both of those guys, to be real. That's just my opinion. I think Omar has the tools to beat both of those guys, and I would much rather see that fight than them two fighting again, because I think we're going to get the same story.
Yeah, that's an interesting assessment about, like, what would be next for, you know, either one of those guys. Instead of, you know, having a rematch against each other with the fight, Omar Figueroa instead does. I think, you know, Figueroa is a more, you know, active, I'd say it's a more active version of Jesse Vargas, in a sense. So that might be something to look for with both fighters. But, you know, with Adrian Broner having the status that he has, something tells me that he's going to have an opportunity for a marquee fight before the end of the year, maybe against the guy that was in attendance, Danny Garcia. So we'll see what happens here with both of those guys. But, Terrell, what's your take on it?
Can I say one last thing? Can I say one last thing? Excuse me, I'm sorry, Terrell. So, last thing. And it kind of saddened me that, like, I saw Broner's demeanor, like, when they were asking him. Like, don't get me wrong, he deserves to be applauded because he definitely fought more than he has in recent fights. But to draw with Jesse Vargas, a guy who got handsomely beat by Pacquiao and Tim Bradley, you know, against the better guys, he got beat by those guys. You drew with him. And Broner was talking as if, like, yeah, I'm back, you know. Like, this is what I do, you know. Like, dude, the dude almost beat you. You could have made an argument that the dude did beat you. But, yeah, that was kind of – I wasn't pleased to see that he was kind of satisfied with drawing with Jesse Vargas. I'm done.
Yeah, he was dismissive of Vargas leading into the fight and bringing that point up. About him, every time that Vargas stepped up, he lost. But then he goes up against – he's the one going up against Vargas, and he doesn't prove to everybody that he's much better than Vargas. So that is another thing that's disappointing about him. All right, Terrell, what's your take?
Yeah, I won't take too much time, so I want to definitely hear from the rest of the panel on this one. I mean, my main thing for this is, like, with Broner, if this dude's in-ring performance can match – all of the mess he has going on outside of the ring, how much better would he be? Going back when he first came out under Mayweather, if somebody with some common sense and logic could have been on his team as settled down, locked in, and humble, how good could he be right now, even at 147? I mean, my story, because, like, I was kind of looking at the chat as the fight was going on, and I think somebody said same old AB. You know, it's just a summary of his fighting career at this point. You know, it's can he really be more than what he is? At this point, he is who he is. I don't want to call him a mediocre fighter. That kind of sounds mean in a sense, but that's kind of what we get into as far as his label, a mediocre fighter. So how much more can what we want to see? And at this point, he's shown us time and time again he is who he is. It's just too much stuff going on outside the ring for him to rein in his talent. And, I mean, granted, he came in with a new trainer, took his camp down to West Palm Beach, Florida, went out of town on that one, so kudos for that. But once again, he is who he is at this point, and I don't think we'll ever see anything different. A shame. It's a shame.
Yeah, just like I was saying, like Broner being Broner. And I don't know if, you know, people could say that he's a mediocre fighter, but he does give mediocre effort. And that's his problem, in a sense, is that he just gives mediocre effort when he could, you know, be much better than he actually is. All right, 646 is your turn.
You know, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. The way you guys talk about Adrian Broner pisses me off so much. It reminds me of the way people talk about other athletes, especially NBA athletes. Like they said, LeBron James, he could average a triple-double if he wanted to. Someone could do this if they wanted to. Broner could be this if he let his hands go. Broner could be this if he trained harder. Broner could be this. He has so much talent. If he could just put it together. Is no putting it together. Broner is a mediocre fighter. Why are you continually giving this man alibis? Broner averages 39 punches per round. So when people say if he just lets his hands go, there is no letting his hands go. This is just the fighter that he is. It's the fighter that he's always been. It's the fighter that he's going to be. The reason why Broner was successful earlier in his career was because he had the size advantage over people. But what's going on now? Broner is too lazy and out of shape to make 135 safely anymore. He cuts weight from about 170 to 180 pounds every single fight. He's never in shape, never in shape year-round. He's never taken his craft seriously. This is just who he is. It's been who he is. And I don't know what does he have to do to show you and to show the world that he's just not that good. He's not that good. He has been living off of the next Floyd Mayweather tag his whole career. That's basically why he's so popular. It's because he was billed as the next coming of Floyd, and the public ran with that because they knew Floyd was on his way out. He got the Floyd Mayweather rub, and he's been living off of Floyd's fumes for his whole career. He has done absolutely nothing in the boxing game. He's just a title holder. He's only been a title holder. He's cherry-picked at every division he's been in. When he stepped up in competitions, he's been knocked right back down, and the same excuses are made for him. Well, if he would have just let his hands go. Well, if he would have just started earlier. What are we talking about here? Reputation as the next Floyd, that he gets the benefit of the doubt? No. You get the benefit of the doubt from me by what you do in the ring. And what I've seen from Adrian Broner in the ring, his whole career is a fighter that doesn't throw a lot of punches because his cardio is not good. So what happens? He fights in spurts and spurts only. He doesn't really move his head much when you're throwing shots at him. He would just stand there and shake his head as if you didn't hurt him. But guess what? You're still getting hit, buddy. You're still getting hit. So I don't care if you shake your head that it didn't hurt you. I still hit you. I'm still scoring points. Now, as for last night's fight, I had the fight personally a draw. I thought that Vargas won 5 of the first 6 rounds, and I thought Broner won 5 of the last 6 rounds. So I'm fine with the draw. I'm fine with them fighting again. But let's stop talking about Adrian Broner as if he is one of the best fighters in the world that just can't put it together. He's not. He's not that good. He's never been that good. He's not going to be that good. He's just entertaining, and that's it. And that's all I got to say about that.
Well, there you have it, folks. That is the message from Matthew Brown. And if you really didn't get all of that, then this is what he says, what you should do about your hopes about Adrian Broner. And there you have it. All right, well, Rick, what you got?
So I'm conflicted here with how I feel. And I know 646 about to get mad about what I'm about to say. AB, let your fucking hands go. Let your hands go. And I know we say that. I know we say that every fight. But Broner's the type of guy that he's so close to winning a fight, but he's so close to losing a fight. It's like it's just like he wants to be right there at every fight. I think for me, this was the best fight of the night, and I'll tell you why. I am in love with competitive fights. I had money on Broner in the Garcia fight, and I lost. I had money on Broner in this fight. I didn't lose. I got my money back. But if I could put money on somebody and not have to put money on Gervonta Davis, put $100 on Gervonta Davis last night and get $4, put $100 on Charlo and get $5, that's not competitive fight. So when I put money on Broner, he was the underdog. If you put $100, you get $115 back. That's the type of fights that I'm looking for. I'm looking for competitive fights. I ain't looking for fights where if I'm putting $100 down, my man win, he gets $4 back. It's crazy to me. So that's why I say it was the best fight of the night for me, because I'm in love with competitive fights. Mike Grady and Terrell, their points were spot on about everything about AB. Vargas was more active. He went to the body, but he's not a hard puncher. So he could do all that work, but he's not getting the points across. And you know, Broner can land something hard or two punches hard, and he might win that round just based on how the punches. I don't know if it was round 8, round 7, or round 9 where Cunningham told Broner, he said it all fight though, but dude, let your fucking hands go. This, every time you touch this dude, it's an effect on him. And one round, Broner was teeing off on him when he let his hands go. But that was the only round he did it, to me. The Vargas fight, the Taylor fight, Malignaggi fight, Porter fight, even the Madonna fight, all follow the same pattern for Broner. If you just do a little more, you win this fight. Or if you do a little less, you lose this fight. He's just always in that predicament, and this dude is the epitome of a B-level fighter. That shit that he said after the fight, man, it was funny. It was stupid. It was racist. It was everything wrapped up into one. Like, this dude, he was just cool after the fight with Bobby, big up him or whatever. And then the next second, he turned around like, fuck that shit, and just going on some crazy shit. It's just like, he just loved the attention, man. He just loved being a spotlight, man. It's just crazy, and it's funny and sad all at the same time, man. The shit he was saying about Martin Luther King and getting him mixed up with other people, man, that shit just crazy. Broner will never make 135. You can look at his frame; those days been gone. So I don't think being lazy or anything. Broner cannot make 135 unless his legs fall off. That's just not an option. Now he might be lazy to make 140, but 135 is just not an option no more. And the last thing I gotta say, I don't know what the fuck that was on Vargas' back, that acne and shit. That shit need to be checked out.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah,
Warren, how many times have you lost your money on Broner?
Just the Garcia fight, because Garcia is the only fight that I've lost on, because he normally gets the benefit of the fight. Like I said, all his close fights, he normally gets the benefit. Oh, no, I lost money on the McDonald fight and the Porter fight. And I won, you know, I won in the Lissau fight and some other fights. So it's, you know, a give and take in terms of Broner. But like I said before, he's always there, and it's odd. And every fight be so good most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. He, gotcha. Broner has been favored in a lot of his fights. So
you really don't get that much back if you put money on him, unless if he's you know, pretty much going in against somebody that is very skilled, where they could be favored to assess against Broda. But we got our overall assessments about that particular fight and what's next. Just wanted to get into a couple things here in the overtime section of the show. First off is the next fight card that's going to be at the Barclays Center on April 28th. Headlined by Daniel Jacobs, going up against Maciej Selecki, and the co-feature of Jarrell Big Baby Miller against Johan Duopa. This will be a matchroom boxing or matchroom sports card there. Should be in attendance there covering the festivities. Just got to figure out when I'm going to go there. I don't want to be there the day of. That's not going to work well for me. So I'll be seeing if I could get a few questions in for the fighters that are going to be involved in that particular event and the promoter of the event, Eddie Hearn. And so we'll be going in depth about that fight card over the next week there. So we will have that Jacob Selecki fight at middleweight, and we'll see if Jacobs gets the if he gets the win, what's going to be next for him, as he's going to be, you know, pretty much the highest ranked contender for most titles that are out there, except for the WBC title, of course, because that is for Jermall Charlo. And with Jarrell Miller against Johan Duopa, that kind of, we'll see if he'll, that'll solidify Miller's entry into the rankings for the WBA and the IBF there, as he's going to be trying to vie to be the highest contender for the IBF championship, as we know that Alexander Povetkin is number one contender for the WBA championship there. So that's what we got going on next weekend. Anyone want to talk about that real quick before I get in this hot topic here before I close out the show?
Hey, I'll just say real quick in regards to next weekend, I think a lot of focus, the primary focus should be on Jacobs, how he does. And the reason why I say that, I think there's a big storm brewing down the road between Jacobs and Charlo. So we're right now we're holding the ship steady, watching these two guys, someone on the opposite side, but definitely a storm is definitely brewing with those two down the road. So looking forward to that.
To piggyback on what Terrell said, Jacobs, Selecki is a guy who beats Centennial. So it's kind of a gauge to see kind of where Jacobs is compared to Charlo because, like I said, Selecki had beat Centennial a couple of fights back. So Selecki is a decent fighter. I think he's going to put up more resistance than Centennial did, but it's interesting to kind of see how he stands against Charlo with that type of opponent.
Yeah, I was guessing that was it there for that particular fight card. So real quick here, I don't know if we got like a few minutes left in overtime or not. Hopefully we have more. But the last thing that I wanted to touch on is the ongoing topic that has been going on over the course of the week in the sport of boxing, and that is the back and forth between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder with multiple parties involved, Eddie Hearn, Shirley Finkel, Ludabella, and such. Just wanted to get into that real quick and then see what y'all take on it. I'm going to see if y'all could go ahead and go through that here first. First, I'm going to start with World Rank. Go ahead.
So I don't really I let y'all talk about it because I don't really care unless they fight. So I don't really want to talk about what's going on in the game.
Yeah, I'm pretty much still the same with you on that one because, like, at this point is so much back and forth going on from both sides, and it's all about getting in position for who's getting how much everything. So, I mean, stories already been told. Wilder has never fought on pay per view. Joshua has never fought here in the stateside. And my main problem with that, you are hoping to go into an event, a Wilder Joshua fight, where one fight has never even fought in his country, yet you want that country sale to come to you. And it's almost like, why would they support you? I mean, granted, pure box fan, they want to see the fight, and people will pay to see the fight. But to me, it's almost a sense of a slap in the face that you never even fought here before, yet you want this country to support you. So I don't like that part. I mean, we broke this down 25 million different ways, 25 different times in regards to Wilder's record, who's fought, things like that. Like I said, at this point, we just want to see the fight. I want to see the fight get made. I mean, we already know that Joshua's the A-side, Wilder's the B-side. We know that. And so, I mean, you got promoter like Hearn trying to, in a sense, lowball Wilder, in a sense, with taking a flat fee. And it's funny because in a sense he's in a way justified for that, but at the same time you want to come back and counter that, say, well, you're not getting a flat fee, why you just take all the rest of the money? So Wilder has a point in that as well. So, but like I said, it's kind of gets sickening to the point where you got all this back and forth going on. Please just work out the deal. Great demand for this fight. There's a certain monetary limit for this fight at the same time. So we don't want people to be out there saying, "Well, I want this, I want that," and when that exceeds the total purse value of the fight. But like I said, right now we're just stuck in the middle of a lot of back and forth, a lot of speculation, a lot of people going on Facebook Live debating the different various and somewhat meaningless points. But I don't even want to go into that because there's a certain boxing group on Facebook. I'm not even gonna call the dude's name because that would give him a little credit. I don't even do that much. This guy's a freaking idiot. I mean, I like being around and telling the people like you guys on this channel that can talk boxing, that can appreciate each other's viewpoints and respect each other. Because not one time have I been on the show has anyone called anyone out their name or anything like that, because we respect each other's opinion. We're grown men, and grown men do that with respect. I appreciate that. But there's definitely some idiots out here in this planet that are just vile. I'll leave it at that.
Tell me to say the same motherfucker who I talk to is.
Man, their Facebook pages are crazy, man.
Yeah, those off the chain, man. Off the chain.
Terrell, was it the same guy who I had a debate with?
No, it was not him. But it was a guy that debated him this week on Facebook Live. It was not him.
Oh, okay.
Not.
Hey, Mike. I gotta send that to you. I gotta send it to you.
Yeah, send it to me. I like to see it. But
wow.
I agree with Terrell and World Rank. Like, what antics happened? I'm not really familiar with what antics happened. I mean, I want to see the fight. I know who will win the fight. Or who has the highest probability to win, but all of the the tabloid, you know, gossip and all that stuff, I could care less about that stuff too.
Gotcha. Let me see. Real quick, Matthew Brown, let me see like how much we got on here. So go ahead. That's all I really have to say, man. Just make the damn fight. We know what is happening. Eddie Hearn is trying to milk the cow. He is trying to milk the cow and milk the people of England. Okay, we know what's happening. A flat fee ain't gonna get it done, baby. You ain't never get no major fight dollar for no flat fee. You offer a percentage of the revenue generated. Now, if you're saying that Deontay Wilder will not generate any revenue, then he's going to be the one that ends up getting less than the flat fee. So what do you really have to lose? You just want to offer a flat fee because you're not serious about making the fight. They sound like they lack the confidence, as Deontay Wilder would say. They lack the confidence in their boy to make a fair offer to get this fight done. Just get the damn fight done. If you want to do 70-30, if you want to do 65-35, that's fine. Fight done is you do 70-30, Joshua gets the UK pay-per-view, Wilder gets the U.S. pay-per-view. Since Wilder's not a draw, let him get everything off the U.S. pay-per-view. Let's do it in England. Let's do it at 10:30 p.m. in England, 5:30 p.m. in the United States. Let's do it the last weekend in August. Let's get this fight done, and let's get undisputed. That's all.
Hey, does Hearn also like the feet work, like Deontay Wilder likes to say?
Listen, Deontay Wilder got that feet work. He got the confidence. If you speak it, you dream it, you believe it, you will achieve it. You hear what the man say. He does exactly what he says every single time. Why do we keep doubting this man? He does what he says. Yeah, Luis Ortiz had him in a whirlwind, but guess what? He got out that whirlwind, and he knocked his ass out. He's the only man that can say that every man he fought, he put on his ass. Okay? You got to understand, Deontay Wilder is the best heavyweight. He's just out to prove it, and he will prove it this year as long as the business is right. Let's get the business right. Let's get this fight done. The people want to see it. Let's stop milking the people. Let's give the people what they want.
Hey, man, when you said that whole thing about, you know, when you speak it, when you believe it and all of that, hey, you were almost sounding like the guy that I was talking about that live video we had.
No, that's not me. I know who you're talking about. That ain't me.
Hey, wait, what you got, man? What you got?
Four games yesterday, four games today. We got basketball on right now.
I don't really have much. I said it earlier. Like, I just want him to fight, man. But on that Facebook page, those are the worst boxing fans ever. The stuff that they say on those pages are fucking crazy. Like, they worse. It's worse than Twitter. It's worse than YouTube. It's worse than any other site that deals with boxing. Facebook is the bottom of the bottom for boxing.
All right, there you have it with that. My take on it is basically done in those Facebook Live videos that I have on my personal page. But I'm just looking at the whole logistics of everything. Matthew Brown pretty much had like the details that, you know, could be laid out. And as far as like the timing, I think the timing would be perfect that they had it in the last week of August. We'll see what ends up happening. Hearn said that he was going to go over to, it'll be in New York, of course, this week because of the upcoming fights at the Barclays Center. So he's going to be meeting with Al Haymon and I think another representative to see if they could iron out details to have this fight between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder take place hopefully sometime this year. Will it be next? I don't think it will be. With that being said, the whole thing about it being in August may be out of the cards. So we're going to be looking for that particular fight around October or November of this year. I don't think it's going to be September because of Golovkin and Canelo is going to be around that September 16th or September 15th. So it's not going to be the week before for an undisputed heavyweight championship fight. So that's pretty much my take on that. And on that note, I'm going to end the show. Be sure to catch the next episode. That'll be on Sunday, 7:30 Eastern time. We'll have a full assessment of what's happened over at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn for that Jacobs Selecki fight. And be sure to catch the sister shows on here, Cohort Truth on Sports on Tuesdays. Take the Cell on Wednesdays when it comes on. And like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit. Not the same in trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everyone.